Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ice-T. I want you to do something for me. Make sure you download and subscribe Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Ioncal. It is official. All right? Stop playing. Download and subscribe Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Ioncal. It's cold.
Known for creating Atlanta hip-hop with a twist, my next guest has worked with Jazzy Jeff, DJ Spinna, J-Live, and much more. His newest album is Kings of Vice. He's Senor Chaos, and welcome him to Library Rap, the hip-hop interviews with Tim Ioncal. Thank you so much for being here, man.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Your dream life truly exists on the other side of your vices.
So before we go into this new album, which is, with Illustrate, which is incredible, by the way, I want to go back to the cover art of the Chaos Effect. You have a banner with the New York City to Atlanta, NYC to ATL across it. What's the significance of these two cities for you?
Yeah, so New York is it's the birthplace for me. You know, born there, raised there, lived there to I was about 11, and then I came down to ATL. So that was a significance. A lot of people kind of migrated down to Atlanta in the 90s and even still to today. But you had folks like Binkus Rex, who Flux from Binkus Records is the one who did the artwork for the album. So the significance of that, but just also like the sound, you know, with Binkus, with myself, and so many others who kind of came down here and just brought that vibe and brought that sound and adapted to Southern living and you know, as well, and kind of added that flavor and those nuances to it. So that was the science behind that.
Nice. Was there you said you were in New York till 11. Were you able to appreciate the New York hip hop you were hearing when you were here, or is that something that kind of, you know, grew on you as you when you moved away to ATL?
A little of both, man. You know, my father was a DJ.
Oh, dope.
So, you know, I've heard music since I came out the womb, and I'm talking, you know, old school hip hop, like, you know, Treacherous 3 and
wow, nice,
Spoony G and all of that type of stuff. So, you know, that's stuff that my father was playing, you know, when I was just a little kid. So I always heard, you know, the music and heard the sound. You know, I think coming down south made me realize that, you know, it's just a different perspective. You know, when I came here, bass music was, you know, was the thing as a kid. You know, we call it booty shake music or bass music, you know. And, you know, completely different sound and vibe, but I loved it, you know, immediately loved it and still love it. But I think it's a little of both, man. Like, you know, it's New York is the birthplace, it's the epicenter of hip hop and hip hop culture. So for me, just kind of being inspired by like everything that was happening in the 80s as a kid and not just music, you know, movies, Beat Street and, you know, Wild Style and all this stuff. That was Star Wars and all of these things that were coming out ended up becoming influences.
So, you know, you obviously have your own sound, your own flow to you, but I want to give you props in the sense where when I listen to some of your work, you remind me of the late great Big L and also Superstition. How were you able to kind of create your own sound, but also come to the point where you realize, all right, this is who I'm going to be. This is what I'm going to represent.
It takes a lot of time, a lot of experience, and a lot of confidence. I think early on, you know, when I was just getting into writing raps and flowing, it's always like, for me, you know, it was taking little nuances, inspired by how to sound like that, but in your own way, your own flavor. And then as time kind of goes on, and I think everybody kind of starts like that, no matter where you started, you know, you had something that you were, that you started with. But as time goes on, you get more experiences, you go through things, you know, you start to develop your own voice. And, you know, music for me has always been sort of, it's a release for me just in terms of it to deal with everything I'm dealing with as a young man trying to survive in America and you know, just be a righteous person, be a good person surrounded by evil and all these other things that are going on. So it's always been kind of release. And the more that I release, the more that I can't release, you know, sounding like somebody else or trying to pick up somebody else's flow or style. Like, it has to completely come, you know, through my voice. And that's exactly what happens. But it's you know, I feel like the great thing about anybody who's rapping now is, you know, we're all a product of our environment in a sense. And for me, I'm just blessed to be a product of a dope environment of 25 years of incredible MCing that, you know, I've been around and been able to listen to and be able to take some of that vibe and, you know, be able to put that into my music. And I always say I make music for lovers of lyricism. So, you know, you name it, Big L, you know, great. And Superstition is the homie. You know, we collabed on our last group project. We got a joint. So, you know, those are brothers I consider, you know, high level lyricism right there. So if I'm in that conversation and I'm in the right space, that's where I want to be.
That's dope. You know, you mentioned your dad being a DJ, and so I want to ask you about the first track. Let's take it back a little bit. The Chaos Effect, The Understanding. It uses a kind of a great example of the DJ scratching. What's for this track in particular, but also in general, what is this, the importance of the DJ and the scratch to you?
Man, that's a good question. It's kind of like something intuitive to me. Like, you don't really think about it, but it's always been there. It's there, and when it's not there, it's like, it's funny. Me and Illustrator listen to the records all the time. Like, yo, this needs some cuts.
Nice.
Like, we got to put some cuts right here. We need some cuts in here. It's like, it's just peanut butter and jelly, man. It's like that piece. It just goes great. You know, you got a dope beat. You got some, you know, some flavorful cuts on it. It just matches well. But, you know, once again, it's like, you know, somebody had to kind of make that a thing. And I think for me growing up, you know, it was like Primo and, you know, guys like that who, you know, Preem was always had the crazy cuts. And I felt he made some records better, you know, by how he was cutting on it or the way he was cutting on it or whatnot. So it's just with that same mindset, man. It's just adding a little more seasoning to a record. You know, you need all your ingredients to make whatever dish you're trying to make, right? And the scratch is one of those ingredients, just like the beat is.
I turned to the new album, Kings of Vice. You know, it starts off with the track BTR, which is, I think, a great reminder of breaking rules within music, within the music industry. It's okay and should be encouraged. For you, what has been the advantage to be able to break the rules? And do you think a lot of artists are willing to take that quote-unquote chance of breaking these rules?
Yeah, I think breaking the rules allows you to move in a way that you truly want to move. And for me, like, that track was about, you know, we had created Ultra Beast United as an indie label with the plans to morph it into a creative agency about a year and some change ago. And, you know, I think when we first created it, we were trying to set it up in the traditional way of, you know, how you would create a boutique label and you know, having a PR and all of these different things. And at some point, I think we just kind of realized, like, for what we're doing and how we want to do it, it doesn't really work for us right now. So we have to go against everything that we've been taught. We have to go against everything that's traditional and just, like, you know, shoot our guns, like just do what we know to do, shoot our shot rather than shoot our guns, you know, just shoot our shot and you know, take a chance and just put the music out and you know, and just try to make sure we're connecting with other lovers of lyricism. But I think for a lot of artists, like our peers, yeah, you know, they're doing the same thing, or they're, you know, if they haven't already, then, you know, they're starting to do it now. Everybody's just figuring out, like, you know, we've been taught as artists that there's a certain way to be successful, or have an album be successful. There's no formula. It just doesn't work the same for everybody. You know, people like doing different things. Some people are very outgoing and social, like to be on social media and like to do a lot of video stuff. Some people don't, you know, so it's like you got to figure out what works for you through your voice. And that's what breaking the rules is about.
There's a dope line off of On One, which I like because it reminds me of a lyric that Talib Kweli spit on Black Star album. When you spit, I'm confident even when I don't get no compliments. And it reminds me of the lyric, I don't get many compliments, but I am confident. Can you talk about the reason you wrote this lyric and kind of can you break it down for us?
Yeah, it's so that's how I started the record. And it's just, you know, life is full of distractions. And sometimes in order to reach your goals, you got to feed your focus, starve the distractions. You know, when you get into a real zone, it's like that's when you on one. That's when you're winning. And it's like nobody's really going to give you praise. It's a very thankless, you know, job as an artist, as a lot of things. You know, really, when you think about it, it's people who do amazing things and they don't really get thanked for what they do. And so that's kind of where that line, you know, came from. You know, I feel like I create good music. I hope people enjoy the rhymes. It's dope. But at the same time, if you don't, then it's like I still have to be confident even when I'm not, you know, I'm not getting no praise. You know, I still got to keep going. And you know, if the album does good or bad, I still have to find the strength and find the will to make another one and go back in on it. So that's what that's about. My literature rich gents, my rhymes gorilla like six steps. So these labels rather get away with my
On one, you talk about the business side of hip hop and how artists have not been kind of able to protect themselves. You start out the second verse with "Tired of these racist gatekeepers." Can you talk about who you're referring to and what are they? I guess what are they essentially controlling in terms of music?
Yeah, it's more so media. It's you know, websites, online places that kind of control just news and what's coming out and what's new and who's hot and it's those sites. It's a little of online radio and different platforms, and I don't want to go too deep and call folks out because we still need them. I still, you know what I mean? I still need them to support you know, to help reach these higher platforms. But it's just like, you know, it's just meetings that me and Four were having and meetings I was having and conversations I was having. And you start to realize that, you know, some people who are kind of controlling the narrative of the music that's getting out also have an agenda. And, you know, last year, kind of when I was going through that agenda just seemed to be like everything that was about the destruction of our people. And, you know, if you weren't making music that relates to you know, selling drugs or shooting people or you know, objectifying women, this, that, the third, and it's like, you know, they don't want anything to do with it. They don't want to show this side of music that's coming out. And you know, I feel like it's not right. There's something wrong with that. Right. So once it really just kind of clicked in me, it's everything I do musically is, you know, we try to express how we feel and what we're going through, but, you know, we also have a job to kind of expose what's going on out here. And because the average person doesn't really know, they just hear music and consume it how they consume and keep it moving. But when you're really in this and you know, having these conversations and these meetings with different brands and organizations, you start to realize like, oh, there's a bigger agenda here, and it's definitely a hidden racist agenda. It's you know, a lot of these companies are owned by people who don't look like us, or not even owned, but just, you know, people that are on these teams, management and such. You know, they don't understand what we do or why we do it. It just becomes a thing of you know, what makes more money, and also at the end of the day, it feels like it's moves are made to make us look lesser than in a sense or whatnot. So That's where it came from. And I'm always going to express how I feel, you know, good, bad, and different. And that's one of those lines.
Is it, I mean, are these conversations you're having, is that like, are they blatantly telling you, like, you know, is it blatant that how what they're saying in terms of pushing back at you, or are they just trying to kind of, you know, they strategically kind of, well, you know, if you sounded like this person.
Man, you know, and there's an instance where it's been super blatant, super like, hey man, you're not talking about this, and you know, this isn't what the people want to hear, and this is, you know, somebody who, you know, telling me what my people want to hear. And it's like, where are you basing this information on? And it just becomes, you know, this whole cat and mouse dance. When you start calling people out on things or asking deeper questions, you know, about their agenda, about what they're, because, you know, the thing for me is I always look at a brand and I look at their mantra, right? You look at a you know, whatever site or whomever, you know, everybody has their little tagline that they're about. You know, we're keeping it real over here. We're doing this. And when I have meetings with people, I call them out on that. Well, your brand mantra says that you're about exposing great music or doing whatever XYZ. So this is why I reached out to you. This is why this falls into that. But, you know, I've had an instance where, you know, it's super blatant where, you know, somebody was just like, man, you ain't rapping about this. You know, I can't support it. We not putting it up because that's all we put up is this. And then you have other instances where people just try to tell you, you know, that you know, the type of music that we make. Oh, this isn't what people want to hear. This isn't what the hip hop audience wants to hear.
But it's more like if you put it out there, people will listen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, I listened to the album a few times, which is great because, you know, sometimes you listen to one album, you're like, crap, I'm done, you know. But no, I listened to the album a few times every track spoke something new every time I heard it, which was great to hear. And I was like trying to figure out kind of what was this kind of like a call to action that maybe you and Illustrate were trying to put together. And I got to the track. Eventually I got back to the track, A Better Way. And you had this great, I think, few words, one line saying you spit, my only destination is hip-hop preservation and legislation. Which I think is just like kind of that real call to action that this kind of album represents. Besides the music, how are you trying to push for hip-hop preservation and also for hip-hop legislation?
I mean, I think right now for me, it's like using my platform through music because that's the biggest voice that I have right now. At least it feels like it. And so that's kind of where I'm, you know, that's like the start. Here, but I think ultimately it's like looking at brothers who I'm inspired by, people like Killer Mike, who, you know, grew up same side of town and me, same area of town, and being able to see him, you know, just start with music and start with Outkast, but be able to grow to be a voice, you know, for our city and a voice for a lot of people around the country, and be respected as such. And I think that's ultimately like a goal. But for right now, I feel I'm just in my infancy of any of that. And right now, I just want to connect with fans on a musical level to let them know where I'm at and what I support and what I don't support, and being able to start there so they can understand, you know, who I am and what this brand is about, and ultimately be able to grow so we can do bigger things, have a bigger audience, and be able to make major moves. I believe that hip hop is, you know, it's a gargantuan force globally, and I still don't think we truly kind of take it for how powerful it is and for how much change it can evoke. And that's what Better Way was about.
You know, you talked about the balancing act, and you know, you're not just an MC, but you know, you're also, you know, a marketer.
Yeah.
And you've worked with Red Bull, EA Sports, RBK, Verizon, you know, all these brands. How do you I hope this question makes sense, but how do you, the balancing act there in terms of connecting hip hop culture and these brands culture and not fearing that you're going to, as an artist, water down hip hop culture because it's mixing with some sort of commercial brand?
Yeah, it's so your question is, how do you balance that?
Yeah, how
yeah, do you it's that? I mean, I think everything has to be rooted in authenticity. And for me in marketing, you know, it wasn't something that I sought out to do at all. I actually fell into it. I was already doing music, I was writing graffiti back in the day. And through graffiti, I fell into street promotions because they're kind of the same thing. It's basically you have a thing and you're trying to get it seen by as many people as you can, right? So you put it in the most high profile areas you can, and this is, whether it's a tag or poster, mm-hmm. sticker or whatever. And through street promotions, I got into event marketing and then eventually product marketing, experiential, et cetera, et cetera. But for me, it's all rooted in authenticity. And, you know, there's a lot of brands who are trying to connect with our audience and our demographic. And, you know, they need assistance just in terms of local, just way of life, you know, local data. Local psychographics, and I've been able to provide that for various brands through Atlanta, just to say, okay, hey, you want to come and do XYZ, you know, you did that in New York, might not work the same in Atlanta, you know, you should tweak it and you know, do it this way to connect. And I've been able to do some, you know, work on some amazing projects for a lot of different brands and create some amazing products and experiences through that. And it's all been rooted in authenticity. When it's not rooted in authenticity and it feels like, you know, a brand's trying to take advantage, that's when I fight back. You know, I've always been a person at the table who fights for us. And, you know, ask anybody I work with, you know, they either love me or hate me because of that. You know, it's just like I'm not going if I'm working with somebody, I'm not just going to let you come in here and, you know, just kind of try to make it a transactional situation or capitalize off the culture in a sense. Like, I always try to work with brands to help them dig in and truly emerge, you know, into the culture. And you know, working with Scion, like, you know, was a big way. And working with EA and the stuff we were doing around entertainers and entertainment marketing, like, it's all just been amazing things. And I think those are the you know, the most impactful things that I could do as a career-wise outside of music.
I mean, you've also worked with Nike, and you know, sneaker culture is always, you know, a lot of times very prevalent in hip hop culture. You know, Sky Zoo is huge with.
Oh yeah, we created sneakers.
What is for you? What is the kind of the importance of connecting these two cultures for you, but also the importance of sneaker culture for you?
Yeah, it's I think it's Jay Lof said this, and he probably got it from somewhere else, but you know, he said it. You know, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. Right. It was a quote, you know, that he said, and that resonated with me, you know, at an early age. So it's really about like, okay, well, what do I like? You know, I like music. I like sneakers. I like basketball. How do I work around those things? You know? Right. And so that's really what it was more about for me. Was just like, how can I work around these things? And also, you know, just going back to inspiration, you know, I started to see people who were kind of doing what I was trying to do, didn't know how I could get there, how to do it. But, you know, people like Bobbito Garcia, you know, Bob was working with Nike, you know, early 2000s and, you know, getting exclusive Air Force Ones and this, that, the third. It was like, man, well, how Bob doing this? Right. And so. You know, you just kind of set out on that quest to figure it out and figure out how to make relationships and build relationships. And it took years, you know, before I was able to kind of cross that threshold and do some of the things that I was able to do with Nike and work on footwear and product that came out. But yeah, man, it's for me, it's just like, you know, what do you love and how can you be around what you love and make a career out of it and then feed yourself out of it.
All right. The album Kings of Vice is I think full of hip hop quotables, right? If there was a lyric off Kings of Vice that kind of you go, oh shit, I can't believe I wrote that, what would be that lyric that you would go to?
Whew, man, that's a great question. I have no idea. I'm trying to go through songs and think. I have no idea, man. I would truly have to sit with it. It's a lot, you know. You know, the album's 13 cuts. You know, the guest features are just family. You know, Binkus and AOS and Headcrack and Book Brown and Four Eyes and Jodie and. And it's a lot of just me, you know, just kind of on the rest of the album. And I feel like it's one of my best projects to date, for sure, just because I was able to really get into a bag lyrically and find a spot where I felt like every verse I was writing and every song that was kind of coming out, I started to feel like, oh, man, this, that one's really good. And then. You know, feeling like, man, I outdid myself on this one. Like, oh, this one's even better than the last one. Like, I made On One, you know, and it's like, okay, On One's good. But then wrote King, and it's like, oh, man, that was even better. And then, you know, Better Way was, I think, the last thing I wrote on the album. And you know, the second verse off of Better Way was like, oh, man, okay, I might really impress myself here. So it's a few, man. I can't pinpoint lines per se. But some of the verses, like, you know, the second verse on Better Way, mm-hmm. The first verse on Stupid Moves, you know, the verse on Jimmy Jump. I'm trying to, you know, it's probably like three of my favorite that just pop out off the jump. The whole song, 97 Luchini, I just have fun writing that. But those are probably some of the verses that stand out, that pop out kind of at the moment after you ask that, that I really felt like when I was into them, like, okay, this one's better than this other one. I might have outdid myself on here. I'm impressed by, you know, how this come out. And that's the best feeling, man, when you're writing something and, you know, you're crossing stuff out and Xing stuff out, when you get to the point where you're like, you know, you finish the verse and it's, and just to answer that, I write. You know, I know there's a lot of folks that like, yo, we don't write no more and rap. I just go spit. And like, nah, I actually write everything. Nice. That's on the album, and I have everything written, and you know, I know the rhyme, you know, but before I get to the studio, so I know actually, you know, how I'm gonna lay it down. But those are probably three that strike out. But the whole album to me, I remember finishing it and then going back and listening to the Chaos Effect and saying, okay, you know, is this, am I better lyrically? And I feel like I was, mm-hmm. and I am. So that was a good point for me. It's like everything I'm putting out, I want to make sure that it's, I'm impressing myself versus like the last thing that I put out.
And also, what I do like is that you talked about the features, and there's no reason to be, you know, quote unquote shy about having features on. But what I do appreciate is that you start out the album BTR with just yourself, right? And then you finish the album KOV with just yourself as well. Was that a conscious decision to do? But two, also, if you could talk about the last track, kind of why leaving the listener with KOV as the last track.
Yeah, it's trying to just kind of provide the perfect bookends, you know, that first and last. Like the first track is like, I got to keep you. You know, I have to engage the listener to make sure you want to hear what's coming next. I'm not giving you everything, but it's like, I'm just want to give you a little spice to be like, hey, what's okay. The beat's banging, you know, talking about something in here. What's, you know, what else is going on? I'm going to keep playing it. And you know, so always like my first track, I think it was an intro is typically always me. I don't think I've ever done like a collab on a first track. That's always like the one I want to set off. And, the last one was kind of the same, just the, you know, it's the title track for the project. It's just a mantra, just kind of celebrating the disciplines that's helped us create and communicate through the music that's on this project. You know, if I would have put anybody on it, I would have like Illustrate to kick a little verse. But, you know, other than that, it's just kind of me sending you off and kind of low key prepping y'all for like, hey, it's going to be more stuff to come.
And could you give us a hint of the more stuff to come?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a journey. And, you know, the journey continues. And you know, King's advice was just like, we just want folks to get in the car and take a ride with us. And once you feel comfortable getting in the car, taking this ride, like we could take you to the next place and continue this journey and just, you know, hit all the destinations we want.
That's dope. New album is Kings of Ice. The artist is Senor Chaos. Chaos, thank you so much for being on Library Rap, the Hip Hop and Divas of Tim Monaco. A great pleasure talking to you.
My man, appreciate you.
Illustrate. Kings of Ice. Ultra Beast United. Mud Knock Studios. Know how we do. Yeah.
The great minds think alike, or do they seem to differ? My mind consists of an entirely different picture. I take you through times, my rhymes are scriptures, fictions. You jury man to the districts, and I'm still the victor. Take you back to May 2002.